Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and Paradigm Shifters are people who are making a big difference in the collective of our species at this time. And my Paradigm Shifter tonight is a very exciting woman whose workshops I participated in, at least one, in the 70s in Vancouver, BC, because she was awakening us and telling us about a brain that was evolving, talking about dolphins and whales, which was the first time I heard people talk about that, and so much more. So please welcome Patricia Sun. Hello, Patricia.
Oh, hello, Veronica. It's so nice to talk to you.
I'm very, very pleased to talk to you, and I haven't seen you for 40 years, so we probably wouldn't recognize each other. So I want to know, what triggered you? You were a young woman then. Well, we're both still young, but, you know, it was a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And what triggered this, first of all, the awareness of dolphins and whales as wisdom keepers?
Well, that's a huge question, actually. I kind of came in very intuitive, although being raised in a, you know, conservative little town in New Jersey, I didn't really have all the language for what I was experiencing. I always had a very strong rapport with animals and even plants. And I remember once I told my mother, I said, you know, if you ask plants to grow more flowers or to grow taller, they will. And my mother said,
oh my.
Patricia, she says, don't tell anybody that.
Was your mom also an intuitive?
Yes, I know. And it's thank God we need, you know, we all have intuition. And when we call somebody an intuitive, from my point of view, it's that they've done the work or been lucky or something that has let it come out. They've learned how to digest what blocks it. And, of course, some people do just come in naturally with DNA and we could say astrological energies or something where they are prone to doing it. But even when you have all the talent, it can be so damaged by people's fear and things that happen to us. So it always, to me, represents when people are intuiting cleanly and clearly and, more importantly, supportively in a way that empowers people and makes things healthier. That shows wisdom. That shows work. That shows that that person looked at themselves and looked at where things don't turn out right, or listen to that soft little voice that tells you, turn left here.
So,
and when you don't turn left, you then find out why next time you want to listen to that soft little voice.
So did you grow up counting on your intuition?
I actually did. I didn't know that at the time. I didn't have any of those formats for holding it. I just lived it and did it. And it's so funny, a thought that just popped in my mind, which is quite heavy, actually. But I remember two big things. One, when I was 2 years old, my mother was scolding me about something. And I could see over her head, like a little cartoon balloon, sort of her view of what happened.
Hmm.
And I was struggling to try to explain to her my view of what happened. Now, I spoke very young. I started speaking at 6 months old, so I knew how to speak. It wasn't that I was a two and couldn't talk. I didn't have a way to say what I was seeing, but I did remember, and she didn't want to hear it anyway, but I did remember thinking, I wish I knew how to write so I could write this down. I think when you get older, you forget you can do this.
Mm.
And so that was like my earliest memory that's very concrete, that was like, hold on to this, pay attention to this. And another one that I started to tell you a minute ago, I was in the playground, and there was a little girl in the playground, and I could see her being abused. And we were fairly young, I would say it had to be under third grade.
Hmm.
And I went over to her, and I just sort of like put my arm on her, and she was happy that I did that. That was fine. But then I said, I'm really sorry. And her eyes got really wide, and she looked horrified. And she said, sorry about what? Nothing happened. Nothing happened. And she walked away. And that was like my first lesson. You have to be very tender. You have to be very gentle. And you don't just blurt out when you see something. You take note and you learn from it, but you don't just blurt it out.
Hmm.
So I became a much quieter person after that, and did a lot of observing. And I grew up in the crazy 40s and 50s, and, you know, it was a lot of, people think the 50s were so nice. They really weren't nice at all. There was a lot of sort of subterranean craziness going on that everybody was ignoring or not acknowledging. And unfortunately, for some reason or fortunately, I could see it. I was going to a Catholic school, and after school I would go to church, and there'd be nobody in the church, and I would pray for the priests and the nuns and the teachers because I knew they didn't understand God.
Wow.
And that sounds wonderful. Like now kind of presumptuous, but at the time it was totally innocent. I was totally aware they did not get what the presence was about love. They just didn't get it. They weren't doing it. And it made me kind of a loner, mm-hmm. but it also was an asset, this lonerness, because I never had to contort my thinking to belong.
Well, you were sure that there was a consciousness that you had that was different than theirs, right?
Well, I could feel it, and it proved itself out over and over. It wasn't like, I see this and you don't. It was, you don't see that?
Well, let's get back. Let's get back to the dolphins. I'm really curious about that because I might be wrong here, but it seems to me that you were one of the major figures that brought forward that awareness of the dolphins and the whales being wisdom keepers.
Well, I think that was true, especially in the particular quality and nature that I did. And what happened for me is, like I told you, I've always had an affinity with animals, kind of read animals well. You know, I'm sort of a natural dog whisperer type person, mm-hmm. but with wild animals too, it doesn't matter. But anyway, I dedicated myself when I opened in my late 20s. I dedicated myself to really trying to bring in healing information and help people understand intuition and all the things we call clairvoyant or psychic or ESP or any of those kinds of things that basically, that's just more of our natural intelligence and we've got funny boxes for them and it's all going to just bloom by itself. And one night I had a dream and it was so powerful. And it was a little bit like, I don't know, there was a superhero that was Aquaman or something, and all the sea life followed him and listened to him. And it was like I was that person, and I was on a dock, and all the dolphins and the whales and all the cetaceans, all the different kinds, the orcas, and everything, they all were coming up, and they say, "You are helping all people. Why don't you help us too?
Oh, my.
That's why great. Don't you talk to us, too? We need you to talk to us, too." And I woke up practically in tears. It was one of those powerful dreams, you know, that just changes your brain, just touches you too deeply. And very shortly thereafter, I bought a ticket to Hawaii. And I flew out, and I went to Sea Life Park, and I made an appointment to talk to the director of the park. And we had lunch, and we were talking, and I was explaining all these things, and she was she seemed interested in everything. And then at some point, I finally said, "Well, you know, I went to Berkeley. I've got 2 degrees. I got them, in 3.5 years, and I graduated with honors." And she said, "Why didn't you tell me that in the first place?" She said, "Of course, you can go into the park. You can go into the it's like she needed some." She needed the
credentials,
qualifier.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I needed credentials. Mm-hmm. So as soon as she felt I had really good credentials, she let me in, and I was given the free rein to go in and look at the holding pens and just go wherever I wanted to go. And when I first walked in, I said telepathically in my mind, I said as I walked through the gate, and there's all these two small holding tanks, I said, "If anybody here wants to talk to me, let me know." And then immediately two dolphins in separate tanks jumped up in the air and jumped down and jumped up again and jumped down. So I went to the one that was jumping actually the most enthusiastically. and that was actually a young dolphin that was the offspring of an Atlantic and Pacific bottlenose. And it was with its mother, and his mother didn't want to have anything to do with me. It was the baby that was all excited. But the mother was like putting her body between us, and she just didn't want me to do it. And I said, "I'm sorry, your mother doesn't want me to do this. I'm not going to do this." to the other one. And the other one, I called her the teacher for the longest time. It was the most profound experience. And I unfortunately, in my house burned down a couple years ago, and I lost all of the pictures of this. But a friend took them. Maybe she's got copies, I hope. But anyway.
I have a feeling that's true. She has.
I hope so. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they were beautiful because it showed what I'm about to tell you. So I went over, and the caretakers there, one woman, she said, you know, these tanks, the one I was going to, she said, these are recently caught dolphins. We've only had them a couple of months. They're wild. They're dangerous. Do not put your hands in the tank. You know, don't put any part of you in the tank. Well, as I went over, in this tank was a pilot, poor pilot whale, on the bottom, I think trying to commit suicide. It was just floating at the bottom. Aww. It never even came up. And this dolphin was jumping, and she just, like, came right up to the edge and, like, looking me almost nose to nose as I lean over. And she's opening her mouth, breathing, and she's got a mouthful of huge teeth. And I looked at her and I said, you know, your teeth are very scary. and so anyway, she rolled over on her side so I could pet her side, which I did. And then she rolled over on the other side. I said, because I told her, I'm afraid of your teeth. So she gave me her side. I touched her side, then the other side. And then she came up with her mouth open again. And I said, your teeth are very big. And then I heard, I don't know how else to say this, it sounds funny, but I heard, put your arm in my mouth.
Ah!
So it was so clean. I don't know how else to describe it. You probably know as an intuitive, there's certain tender, soft clarity that tells you something's true.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just your imagination. It's something more.
Right.
And I felt that, and I just took my arm, and I put it in between her jaws. And I wish I could just show you, but she very delicately, tenderly opened and closed her mouth extremely gently on my forearm.
Oh.
And then she just used her lips to just kind of like kiss me, really just stroke the skin of my forearm with her lips.
Wow.
And I almost cried. And I said, oh, my God, you understand me. And then she got so excited, she jumped. And then this is over a three-hour period now. Every time I'd say, Patricia, you're just having this delusion. You're talking yourself into this. This isn't really happening. As soon as I'd think that, she'd come up, she'd open her mouth and shake her head, and I'd put my arm in, and she'd do it again.
Oh, my gosh.
So we did that several times, and this is what my friend took pictures of. So it was just so exciting, and I later told the woman caretaker, she said, wow. She said, if that's true, this is very sad, because you'll never see this dolphin again, and we're going to just train her like we train all the other dolphins.
Oh, dear.
And it was heartbreaking, and I thought, okay, but this is an experience I'll never forget. And, of course, I shared it with people, and it turned on many people who now actually caretake dolphins and work with them. And so talk to them
and swim
exactly.
with them. Yeah.
Exactly. So
wow.
that's what started that.
Well, I want to go back to how you told me recently that you were getting downloads, and you just recently, right now, you mentioned that you were going through a period of opening. And
yes,
you were a counselor, right?
Well, when I first opened, I was a family counselor for a couple years at a mental health clinic in Berkeley, California, and I was going to the University of California, and I also was working as a teaching researcher in psychology and doing all this kind of stuff.
And you're a mom.
And I was a mom to three kids, and I was sole support for most of their life. And in any case, while I was doing the family counseling, all kinds of psychic phenomena was occurring, and I was investigating it. I wanted to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought there's a lot of flakiness about all this stuff, and I want to know what it is. And one of the things I don't talk about often that I really got into at this time was astrology, because I really did not. I had all the East Coast prejudice and scientific, quote-unquote, bias against it. And I realized, you know, one day, I don't really know how it works. I don't know anything about it. Why am I so snobby about this? So I took a student class, and what I discovered was, my God, this works. How can this possibly work? And I just did thousands of charts and compared it and tried to figure out. And I did this to many things, you know, from reading your people's hands to channeling to healing to, you know, any kind of, you know, clairvoyance, ESP, anything you could think of. I was interested in it, and I would try to figure out what it was. And, of course, as I was doing this, I was starting to do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I always observed myself. This is how I've learned everything. I've always observed my own brain. And at that time, I noticed I had, like, two kinds of minds. One was logical, sharp, verbal, and really capable. And the other one, I called it my soft mind because it was tender, reticent. It stepped back. It was like a soft heart opening. It had no controlling in it whatsoever. And it was there where I would ask kindly, gently, humbly, for inspiration, to know what was good. And that was kind of like my holy mind, you know, with an H, you know, holy. And I realized when I started doing family counseling from the very first session that all that logical training and all that being right stuff was an encumbrance to being really helpful. And that my soft mind was the one I had to go to. So I would start every session with a thought that said, okay, I don't need to be right. I just need to know what's good, what's helpful, what is healing, what will empower people with the problems that they're bringing and help them have understanding. That's what I want to know. And as soon as I went into that mode, people would start to talk, and as they would talk, I would get pictures in my mind, a lot like that little cartoon bubble, you know. And I'd say, you know, excuse me, I'm not sure exactly why, but I'm getting this thought, and I would say it, and people would burst into tears. That I would be seeing something that happened to them when they were traumatized as children. It would always trigger something. So I was going through counseling sessions in one or two sessions with people. And I realized this is not normal therapy. This is not regular family counseling. This is something else. And so as that all started, then I started teaching. And when I would teach, it was only because people actually almost insisted that they pay me and have a meeting so they could ask me questions. And I started that way. I never advertised. And as I told you, I ended up going to about 40 countries, speaking personally to over 250,000 people all around the world over a 15-year period, often going, most of the time averaging about 6 flights a week for 15 years.
Wow. But wait a minute. Before we go past this, was it, you mentioned that you kind of got these downloads which taught you that the brain was unfolding and...
Exactly.
Was this not the root of your teaching?
Quite a lot of those. And it was very interesting because in different situations... I really started to learn, too, that even men and women thought differently and that the natural brain, the holistic brain, the intuitive mind, the left brain, the right brain, really had different modes of apprehending reality and sorting it.
And that was new at the time, wasn't it?
It was very new. It was, the only person who was talking about really this was Robert Ornstein. And I remember reading a little bit of his book and said, thank goodness, somebody else knows this. And I thought, but they don't really get this and they don't really get that. And I was getting stuff that was experiential by doing it. And so I started teaching that, and I also had premonitions, like you say, downloads, sort of hits that we were in the midst of an evolutionary leap and that this evolutionary leap was one of consciousness, yes, but it really was also a change in our capacity to perceive and apprehend and process reality, and that it was much more than just new information.
Do you think it's because we're moving very swiftly through higher frequency beingness and all of that? Do you think it's related to that?
Well, that's just another way to say it, I think.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's just another language from my point of view of saying
that. I guess my question is whether or not you think it's happening through us anyway, even if we don't know any better, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's happening to every human being on the planet, without a doubt, of every age. Whether you're fighting it, whether you're resisting it, whether you don't believe in it, whether all your experiences don't lead you there, it's still part of your brain and you're part of the human race. And it's every race, it's every culture, it's every nation, it's everyone, everybody.
And the earth itself, right?
On the earth itself, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're all changing, and it's and that's one of the reasons we're getting a little flaky. Is a number of reasons I could explain that. One is because we're getting really overloaded, and when we get overloaded, it's a kind of fear, and you do fight or flight. You get simplistic. So we are trying to mature our brains and not be so simplistic, black and white thinkers, which is immature logical mind, immature left brain. That just needs to be right to feel like it can survive, that you're not going to get killed. People, you'll be right, you'll be smart, you'll be followed, you'll be accepted. So everybody wants to be right. So they lie to themselves and they block out information that would prove they're not right so they can keep the illusion that they're right.
So it's a security thing, right?
It is. It's a defense mechanism. And this is the biggest difficulty that human beings have right now in changing, because it's such a strong defense mechanism. And fortunately, the intuitive mind is softer and more gentle, and it can get insights and have powerful experiences maybe with your dog or with your child or with your lover or with your friend or just with heaven or a plant or, you know, just the earth nature itself. You can have experiences that... where you hear a voice that warns you to not do something, and you follow it, and so your intuition is quickening. And what I realized is that when the two hemispheres are trying to mature to work together, the linear mind really doesn't like the intuitive mind. It seems flaky and too soft and not concrete. And the intuitive mind is kind of always sort of relegated to our dream life, which is classic intuitive mind thinking, because it's visual, it's pictures, it's emotions, it's metaphor, it's imagery, and that's how the right brain communicates. It communicates in stories and metaphor and double meanings and triple entendre and so on. It is a intuitive mind that's acausal. It doesn't need logic. It doesn't need to be right. Like a dream can be incredibly powerful and totally transformative to you and completely correct and helpful, but not be literally true.
Not make any sense. Do you think it's literally all related to being multidimensional? Do you think that we're, for example, everything's visual these days. Is that kind of a metaphor for us becoming more and more intuitive and counting on our visions?
Yes. We are actually creating a whole generation of kids that can't read and can only look at things practically because, and movies are getting so potent, so tremendous, although they're also getting very awful at the same time. Like I said to you the other day when we were talking, that opening line in Charles Dickens' Tale of Two Cities, it's the worst of times, it's the best of times. And that's where we are now. We're doing the worst of everything we do, and we're doing the best of everything we do.
Well, if this brain expansion that you're talking about, which I really believe in as well, is it going to move us, in spite of ourselves, to the best of times, if you will? Is it able to do
that?
Oh,
absolutely. Absolutely. It is totally a process by which we mature ourselves. The brain will mature itself by certain things not working. It's the way nature works. Mm-hmm. It doesn't go in a straight line. It's organic.
It's a ripening.
It's a ripening, and there's a process involved, and you need certain circumstances, and you start to notice what helps and what hurts, what brings a bad ultimate end and what brings a good one, and what was it that we did that made it be good? What did we listen to? What did we do? And that's why I often had this image, and it's not exactly accurate, but when you try to get the dregs, like if you had wine and you had all silt at the bottom and you wanted to filter it out, if you let it just sit at the bottom, it doesn't get filtered up. But if you stir it up and all the dregs get mixed in and then you filter it, you get out all these chunks of stuff that don't work. Mm. And I think that what we're doing is we're stirring the bin right now, you know, with the election, with the politics, with the environment, with medicine, with schools, with every human institution you can imagine. They're all in a mess because we're all doing what I call old-style thinking.
What do you think of John Stewart's rally?
I think it's wonderful.
I didn't
see the whole thing, but I did see part of it. And, you know, he's using humor as what humor is for, that which seems too painful to hit head on because the linear mind would rush to condemn you or judge someone else and condemn them. What the the humor, what humor does is it breaks the dead lock of linear thinking and lets you jump the track to see how foolish this dead linear, you know, right thing isn't healing anything.
So it's a real awakening process, isn't it?
It is, totally.
That's so exciting. So in your teachings then, were you able, and this is way back in a way, were you able to evoke awakening in people? You called it planting seeds, and you knew intuitively that that was your big job, right?
That's right.
Because how do you feel about that?
I could sense all of the blockages. That's what my opening was about, is processing all of the different blockages I had and then other blockages I saw in other people and trying to figure out what blocks it, why, and what comes out when you heal it, and what does it take to undo these blockages? What does it take to heal it? And so my workshops were totally geared 100% all the time. There wasn't one sentence that was wasted that wasn't part of a support or a setup to have just a slightly different point of view, a slightly different way of looking at things. That's why I knew people, when people started sort of plagiarizing me, I knew because they were using phrases that I took a long time to devise that were not ordinary. They were a little odd, because I didn't want people to just go down the same old track. I wanted them to have to stretch and say, what is she saying? Mm-hmm. What does she mean here? And then in that moment when somebody, I call it teaching on the draw, when somebody asks child, you know, in school teaching and teaching as what, spiritual teachers or whatever, or just plain old communication, when somebody asks something earnestly, there are a whole lot of systems open inside that person that you must be very respectful of and respond to with, if you do know something, with a lot of kindness and a lot of thoughtfulness to keep the right doors open so that growth can continue. And by the right door, I mean not the fearful doors, because the wrong doors, from my definition, I hate to do right and wrong, but the wrong doors would be things that make you clam up again, things that make you angry, things that make you judgmental, things that make you throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Well, I noticed in one of your YouTubes you were referring to the fact that our lineages in humanity has got a terrific amount of defensive energy in it from, you know, a lot of, I'll let you talk about that, because when you're talking about releasing blocks, we need to remember that that good old subconscious is pretty rich, isn't it?
And by our biological bodies, we are animals, we're primates, and we're extremely complex ones, and we do have magnificent brains, which we don't use anywhere near all of. And I remember when I was a kid, I first heard that we didn't use, we only
used a tenth of our brains.
At 10%, and then it went up to 15% of our brains. And I remember thinking, that can't be right. First of all, nature never wastes anything. It just seems like that. So why does it seem like that? And so I started thinking about it. And then when this other thing, my own brain was changing, and I was feeling this difference and feeling the softness and the tenderness of healing energy and how that helped people open and helped them release grief from traumas. I mean, think of all the wars we've had, all the sexual abuse, all the physical abuse, all the psychological abuse.
All the dominance issues, eh?
Well, the dominance issue is just, like arrogance, is just fear. It's immaturity and insecurity. And people who need to be bullies are people who need to dominate because they feel so terrified and so powerless inside that they need to find anyone that they can dominate. Mm-hmm. And so it starts to be mixed into social activity and even relationship things and male-female things. And women do it as much as men do it. They just do it a different way. But there's this, the need to be dominant is just a fear that you don't know how to stay connected. Mm-hmm. You don't know how to do the dance. One of the things that I set up as an image for good, healthy communication and what it looks like, and it's a funny little image, but it's really helpful if you stop to think about it energetically. And what it is a ping pong ball kept in motion. And I say good communication is not like the game ping pong, but when you're playing, but when you have the ball, if I send the ball, and the goal now in the game is not to make you lose, but to make you win, to make you connect. So I send the ball as best I can so you can hit it. And then you respond, and you, in on the fly, you send it back to me as best you can so I can get it. And that's good communication. But what we do in old-style thinking, we need to be right, we need to win, we need to be superior, we need to dominate, like the regular game, ping pong. And so we learn to slam the ball, we hold the ball.
We trick
somebody.
So when
you slam the ball, you're angry. When you hold the ball, you won't talk. And then this other very tricky thing that people do that sometimes women are very, very good at is they get hold of the ball, and they take the ball, and they lean over the net, and they tap the other person's paddle. They never let go of the ball. Then they come and they tap their paddle, and so they're keeping control total. There's no game. There's no surrender. There's no trust. Mm-hmm. There's no learning. There's no process, but there's control. But there's no process, so there's no relating. There's no relationship, and that's the essence of a good relationship, is that you don't control it, that you send earnestly, you receive with the best ability you have, and you send back as best you got, and you see what you get back again.
I love that.
Relating and funny, that's what a relationship is. And if you hear all the talk shows on TV and even all the books, all the relationship stuff is about controlling and judging and not really about trusting the process.
Well, don't you think a lot of people are getting better at this now?
Yes,
I mean, our relationships all had to break apart like mad for us to be able to look at the stuffings, to create a place to look at our controls, didn't they?
Yes, yes. It is. It is a big. It's quite a whirlwind right now, and that's why everybody's overloaded. As I tried to make an explanation a minute ago, and I partially did, because so many people who call me now as clients who have problems going on or just want some feedback. Everybody says they're so overloaded, it's hard to hold everything. And they feel like they're being flaky or they're not as reliable as they used to be. And I say, well, listen, this is part of the right brain opening. The linear mind doesn't have absolute control. That's one powerful, important, I want to talk more about in a moment. But also, it's because we're taking in so much. We are overwhelmed.
I heard it was 10,000 times as much in any period of time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And the economy and money and fear about loss and jobs and everything. We're fearing so many things. The environment, will we live? Will the planet stay alive? We really have serious problems that are real that are making our minds spin. And in the meanwhile, everybody who wants to go old-style thinking is saying, just don't read about it. Just give us your money and we'll be okay. Just pay attention to advertising. Spend, buy, pollute, it's okay. We don't have global warming. They just don't want to think about it.
Well, let's jump into you going off and teaching those years past. Have you found that the impact that you made in 40 different countries is still emanating back to you? Are you Are you hearing about? So let's talk a little bit about that. You talked about Buckminster Fuller. That's a really wonderful quote that's on your website as well.
Oh, Buck.
Somebody who's very, very powerful in terms of engaging people's empowerment, wasn't he?
And he also did it in a very humble way. He did it, which is the most powerful way always, actually. It's that Lao Tzu, those that know don't say, those that say don't know. That isn't an absolute, but you will find that those that say and know don't say all they know. They say enough so that you can begin to discover yourself. Mm. And that is part of this whole thing. And Bucky, I don't know to share what he said, but I had met him a couple of times and we'd talked and we'd had dinner one time. And when he was getting on to leaving, we were both at a conference and somebody came for me and said, Bucky'd like to see you. And I came and he was laying down and he was not feeling well. And I gave him a healing and I made these sounds that I make. And he's so sweet. He always took his hearing out ate out when I made these healing sounds that I made. And so he just took it so sweetly, and then he said, "Thank you, dear." He said, "You've taken away a fear that's been with me all my life."
Oh.
And it was so tender. I almost feel a little embarrassed sharing it because it was very sacred. It was very sweet. And I share it in that spirit because that's the kind of tenderness we need with one another to heal our fears, because truly, there's a quote I made up a long time ago, going through the portal of your greatest fear is how you find your fondest dream.
Oh.
And that's why there's so much courage involved, and that courage comes from the old French, which means heart. And we are all trying to gain heart. As we also intellectually grow, let our linear minds expand and keep track, accurate track of facts, not just words to fight back with and win and have a one-upsmanship with, but words that will serve to heal, words that will serve to empower, to enlighten, to ease a burden, to...
to send out into the collective as well, because they're all
exactly
loaded with energy. Tell me about the type of energy. You spoke to me about this a little bit earlier, and I enjoyed it very much. So how did you do your energy with people?
Well,
or your healing?
It emanates from my body.
Okay.
It's just like a radiance. I feel my body fill up with it,
mm-hmm.
and I can be about 20. I can have an aura about 25 feet wide, and people will feel it. I mean, I've walked on streets in places like Ireland and Russia and places where they're very psychic people,
mm-hmm.
and people will turn around and say, "Who are you?" I mean, I'll be behind them. They won't even see me. They'll feel it.
Wow!
But when I'm teaching, I try to fill up with that energy, or when I'm healing someone who's got something going on. I try to fit, it's chi, you know, I don't know, it's got all kinds of names, you know, it's the Holy Spirit, it's chi, it's, you know, it's real, it's a psychic, physical, spiritual energy, and it's love, but it's love that's not cloying or controlling or needs anything, it's just a radiant warmth that wishes well. And in that radiance, each person can get what they need at that moment. So that's what I started doing. I started using all the healing that I learned about in my workshops when I was speaking and send it out into the room. Mm. And as I told you, the largest group of people I ever spoke to was about 10,000 people.
Oh, my.
And it was in Canada. And I remember... imagine 10,000 people, and children were there, babies were there. You know, it's a big auditorium, and it was, you know, it gets noisy. Well, when I was teaching, and especially by the time I was making the sounds, there was such silence that you could hear the babies cooing.
Oh my, that's wonderful.
The babies oh, and it was so powerful and quiet and tender and soft, and it's not the big razzmatazz jazz strutting across the stage. It's tender, and this is what I want to be on television for.
Okay.
I want to do this on television. I want to have a show that's soft, that solves problems, that's respectful, that's earnest, that can tell the truth wholly, and you can only tell the truth wholly when you're very kind.
Mm-hmm.
Because
when you're wholly in the truth, you mean.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It has to have tremendous kindness, because otherwise you're salting people with what they're doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't help anybody.
Mm-mm.
And you do need to say what's wrong. It's not judgmental. It's having healthy judgment. And the more you offer it with love and kindness and respect for the process and for humanity's challenge at this point, the more powerfully you will teach it.
When you were talking about the brain evolving, and then we're talking about this amazing energy that you have, and were you A, born with that, and B, did you pass it on to trigger the evoking of that energy in people? Is that part of what your healing is?
Absolutely.
So do those 10,000 people all walk on water by the time you finished?
Yeah, everybody got some version of it. You know, some people got way more than others because they were way more ready.
Mm-hmm.
But those that weren't ready, they didn't get way more walking around with the energy, but what they got was way more ability to process the wound that they took on, their gift to us.
Mm-hmm.
The depth of the wounds they took on, they got more support to process that.
Well, do you think that this comes because of many lifetimes of accruing wisdom on your part? Because you certainly didn't have an easy time as a child. What do you think about that?
You know, that's so funny. People used to ask me that, and I would say, no, I don't even want to go there. I don't know what it is. You know, I don't know why I do this, but I just can do it. I didn't like that a hierarchy kind of thing. But as I've gotten older, I have realized at least this. One, I came in with it.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it from the moment I was born. I was doing it, using it 2 years old. I had it already. That I know. And the ESP, the kind of knowing things, deja vu, things you'd say truly proves you had past lives. I mean, I can go to Europe and in Florence and in Spain, of all places. I never thought it would be Spain, but in Spain I had all these hits, and I just can't. I knew where things were. I knew what they were. In Japan, oh, tremendous psychic hits everywhere. I know what, and people would say, "How do you know this? Only our old people know this." I mean, the guides were blown away. How do you know this? I tell them what symbols meant in the temple. So it's just something I was born with, for sure. Came in with it. Where that comes from, I don't know. Is that me tuning into past lives that have been lived? Is it my soul? Is it
tapping the Akashic records or something of that ilk?
Yeah. I see. We invent names for things that are manifesting as something, but sometimes we invent names that are too
confining.
Confining, perfect word, perfect. Mm. Limiting. They limit the next step because they say, I've got it, it's this. Mm-hmm. It's the Akashic record.
Well, that's the same as you were saying earlier. When you're trying to be right, you're not open for that softer mind.
And that's what's wrong with New Age stuff all over the place. But it's also wonderful New Age stuff at the same time, because it's also pioneering and trying to touch all these different capacities and abilities that we have, and find ways to be supportive to each other.
And are you going to come forward again in the world and start doing large groups and going to 40 countries again?
I will.
40 levels of consciousness.
You have to remember, the last time I never advertised, everybody just asked me. So as soon as people start asking me, I'm going. I never turned down anybody before. I went to a group that was so small. I would travel anywhere at that time. I can't quite do that anymore, and that just because I'm getting too old to do that. But I will do it still anyway. But I would love to be on television, because that way the energy goes through the TV, the concepts, you can do it on an ongoing basis. People can take what they can use. More people are ready than ever before in the history of humanity.
Well, global radio is not too bad place to start here.
Well...
We're global radio, right?
Well, I will look at global radio, and maybe there'll be a way that I can do that. There's a radio station in the San Francisco Bay Area that wanted me to do a show, and I want to so much, but they needed me to bring one sponsor. Well, I don't do that part very well. So if any of your listeners know of a great sponsor, you know, something that's good, too. I make it harder. I don't want to have sponsors that aren't good.
No,
that
I know
aren't good
what you
products.
Mean.
So, you know, but then I'd be on the radio, and I know it's going to snowball, and it's begun. And even you're asking me, this is part of the snowball, and I thank you so much for asking me, because this is how it works. You know, the energy picks its space and its place by the hearts that are quickened, that sense it, that feel it, that want it, and that's how we're going to serve each other and help each other, is because we will listen to that.
Well, and one of my friends, Gloria Wilcox, just raved about you. She's really enjoyed.
Oh, she's such a dear.
Yeah, so that's how it gets passed on. Now, I know you were kind of questioning whether or not you would be willing to do this, but I'm asking if you'd like to talk more about the sounds or if you're willing even to make some.
Well, you see, okay, I think what I'll do is, let me see. I'll make one sound. It's a little odd over the air. I make these sounds. I'll explain it a little bit. First, for me, they're sacred. So I guess if I can tell you what Bucky said, I can make a sound.
Well, I think most of my listeners are very consciously bound and sacred.
Respectful, yeah. So the thing is, the reason too for that, not to make it too woo or anything, it's just that if you... the sounds, I believe, help the two hemispheres of the brain relax and work together at a frequency level.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of bypass a lot of the logical of fighting and fears, and so the sound is just a tone. It's like a meditative state. The sound, it's not even an audible sound. Sometimes I think it's a psychic sound, and the audible sound supports the psychic sound. And so your mind says, oh, I know that place. And then you feel it, and you're in a kind of reverie, and there's a resonance that comes. And that's what the sounds are for. So having explained it that way, I'll make, you know, one or two, maybe three. I don't know. I'll just see what comes.
And just one question. Did they just come through you initially, and that's how you learned them?
Oh, yeah, they just came through.
Yeah, right.
I never learned them at all. In fact, I fought them. I had this very wonderful lady, wonderful psychic woman, who I think she's passed on, but she said, you are going to make sounds that heal. She says, you've been a healer many lifetimes. You know all kinds of healing. This is the way she spoke. That was her language. And she said, you know all kinds of healing, and you're coming here to bring it all together. And you're going to make sounds that are going to be very healing to people. And she was part Indian, and she made like these chanting sounds, mm-hmm. and she did them with me. And I remember thinking the first time she said that, I said, I am not making funny sounds. I know how I judged you when you stood behind me and made these chanting sounds. I'm not going to make these sounds. And then I went through a very powerful release of tremendous grief. And as I was crying, there was like a soft bolt of lightning that went up through my feet, came up through my body, poured out my mouth, poured out my eyes, and shot out the top of my head. And when it came out my mouth, out came the sounds.
Wonderful.
And I had two black eyes.
Oh, really?
Wow. And I think it was just the power of it. It was like I just had to get me, my, you know, Patricia personality out of the way so that this physiological shift could continue and come through.
Well, one more question I have then is the being burned out and some of the other traumas that happened before then, were these tools for more purification so that your work is what I would consider to be even more potent now?
Yes, that's exactly what happens. And that's what happens to all of us. The more you work, you know, it's so funny, it's the dark before the dawn. The more you step into the garbage, the more you look at what's wrong, the more you feel your emotional response to it, the more you observe yourself, the more you do it with contemplation, with kindness for yourself and others. I love the Buddhist thing, you know, have love and respect for all sentient beings. And when you do that, including yourself, you set up a frequency that allows spontaneously transformation to occur. You don't make transformation occur. You work to get the stuff out of the way that's stopping it.
Excellent. All right, I'm ready for the sounds. I'm sitting here in my on my my jet chair here.
Okay, let me just... Well, you know, after I make the sounds, it's kind of hard to talk, so...
So I just want to give your website, which is patriciasun.com. I want people to check up on what you're doing and give you some feedback.
Yes, and maybe invite me to speak at a church or a conference. I love to do keynotes where there's a lot of people because the more people there are, the more powerful the shift is. So I'd also be happy to go do that. You know, I can do those also.
I think that would be so wonderful. Do you ever come up to the Northwest?
Bellingham, by the way. I love Bellingham. Bellingham was one of the places I used to always go. I was asked over and over to go to Bellingham, and I'd never heard of it before when I first started, and it was one of the real focal points of healing change, I think.
Well, maybe we'll get you up here. Although I'm sure grateful that you're on the air, and I hope you'll do that again with us.
I will, anytime.
Right. Thank you.
Okay, well, I'll make the sounds now, and then I'll say a few words when I finish, sort of in closing. I'll be kind of quieter. I always like people to have a moment of reverie after listening to sounds to sort of let it soak in and digest it. So I will thank you with all my heart and send you a big hug for having me on and all your listeners, and I hope it's helpful.
Oh, I'm sure it is. It sure is for me. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Okay, so I'll make these sounds now, and I'll just say a few words in closing after so you know I'm finished, because that's just usually the way I do it. So.
Perfect.
Here goes. It helps to close your eyes, by the way, and remember to breathe.
Okay.
Of God vibrates within you and all things, and it radiates from you as you. So very gently now, being aware of this feeling, knowing that you can have it again anytime merely by remembering it with feeling, and that you have capacity to heal yourself always, at all times. And so very gently now, when you feel ready, allow yourself to be aware of the light in the room around you. And when you feel ready, open your eyes and be here.
That was wonderful.
Thank you so much, Veronica.
Well, bless your heart. Thank you so much, and we'll see you out there.
Yes. God bless us all.
And you.
Take care.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.